We're thrilled to have on the WBGO Journal the executive producer of the Apollo, award-winning director and producer Camila Forbes. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
The 85th anniversary season for the Apollo.
That's right. That's right. Can you
believe
it?
Great excitement all season long, and you have so many things that we're going to be talking about, the new construction that's been going on. But let's talk about, first of all, the start of the season and now heading into a brand new show, Twisted Melodies. How fun has it been to be a part of the Apollo for the 85th season?
I mean, this season has been so incredible. I mean, we started the season out with a bang, literally. We celebrated the 50th anniversary of James Brown's Live at the Apollo recording album with a concert that was curated, actually, by Newark's very own Christian McBride, called Say It Loud, in which we were saying it loud for a whole 90 minutes on the Apollo stage with special guests like several of James Brown's original bandmates, folks like Lisa Fisher, folks like Lee Fields. And it was just a magical, magical evening, celebrating the legacy of James Brown and all that he did for Apollo, for Harlem, and just for America and Black culture. And so that was the start of our season. And then now rolling into now, the close of our season, where we get to celebrate another great, and that's Donny Hathaway through the work Twisted Melodies, which is a co-production between Baltimore Center Stage, the Apollo, and the Mosaic Theater in Washington, D.C.
I'll be honest, about 20 minutes before you got here, I was listening to Roberta Flack and Donny Hathaway, The
wow.
Closer I Get to You, and I've been humming it ever since.
Yeah.
Some of these songs just won't, you know, just stick with you.
They do.
And bring back so many wonderful memories.
Over and over again, I try to tell myself that we could never be more than friends. And all the while inside, I knew it was real, the way you make me feel.
So let's talk about, first of all, you've been with the Apollo since 2016, correct?
That's right, that's right.
You have said, in the arts, make the road while walking. And you've been doing that since you've been here at the Apollo 2. Explain that for our listeners.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Apollo is at a really exciting inflection point. And I think the inflection point has been, many people don't know, but although we've been around for 85 years, we've been a nonprofit since 2001 and consistently programming since 2012. So, you know, there is a new Apollo, I think, that's been in construction on the horizon in the midst of where we are right now, right? It's this new era of what the Apollo means as a performing arts center, as a nonprofit institution, as a mission-driven institution, mission-driven around, you know, what does it mean to be a creative cultivator of Black culture, innovation, and creativity. To be a mission-driven place for that is a new space, I think, for the Apollo as a nonprofit. It's a different model, but same mission, I would say.
And how exciting is it that when people hear the Apollo, it brings back so many great memories of past performers, but so many new things are happening now. It really is terrific to talk about. It's the Apollo Performing Arts Center.
That's right.
Not the Apollo Theater.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this is part of our expansion. So, you know, part of the physical expansion is that we're physically expanding in space, and then we're also physically expanding in the idea of who we are. So the Performing Arts Center means that, you know, we are gaining two new theaters that will come online next year on 125th Street. That's part of the Victoria Project Development. And in those two new theater spaces, we'll have a 99-seat and a 199-seat, along with new office spaces. But this will allow us to further deepen our mission. These spaces are far more intimate. They're far more suitable for dance. So this is an opportunity for us to commission a lot more artists, have a lot more artists in residence, and really, truly be that home, that landing place where artists can take very large risk in their work and grow their work with us.
From James Brown to most recently, we talked about the Apollo Theater, and we actually used the words of 99-year-old Norma Miller, who passed away earlier this month. the last of the Lindy Hoppers at the Savoy, but she talked about winning a dance contest, a Lindy Hop contest at the Apollo when she was just 14 years old.
Wow.
And now we're talking about all the youth programs as well that the Apollo's involved in. Touch upon some of the things that you're most proud of when it comes to dealing with the youth in the area.
Yeah, so our education and youth programs really span the gamut, right? We are in over 46 different schools across the five boroughs of New York City, deploying teaching artists and artist curriculum that are based in African-American culture and African-American culture and arts that we build inside of the Apollo. We host up to 8,000 students a year as a part of our School Day Live program, in which we're curating specific program for young people and invite young people through subsidized ticketing, through our subsidized ticketing program, to the theater on a monthly basis through our School Day Live program. And then on top of that, one of the programs I'm really proud of is our Apollo Theater Academy. And that's our training program. And we train young people from across the city through the ages of 13 through 18. And it's a high school internship and training program, which we're training them jobs behind the scenes. So, you know, there's so many programs that I think train young people to be dancers, singers, actors, etc., playwrights. But what we're focused on is directors, producers, sound technicians, audio tech, lighting designers. Who are those folks who make the magic behind the scenes? And how are we preparing our young people to be ready for those jobs and to be ready to step in those positions moving forward and to be the producers of tomorrow? I'm looking back as who's replacing me, right, in 15, 20 years. And that's what our training program is focused on. And that's what I'm really excited about and really proud of.
And I imagine the kids respond to executive producer Camila Forbes, who's been associated with so much success, the Broadway revival of A Raisin in the Sun, The Wiz Live on NBC, Deaf Poetry Jam, Tony Award winner. Do they realize your background, some of these kids?
Oh, you know, some of them do, I think. But I think what they realize more is, and what I think is what's probably most significant, is that I am a person at an institution that they can touch, that they can feel, that looks like them. And I think that's probably the most significant, is that there is representative of a clear pathway of future. It's funny because I think when I was growing up, I didn't see a lot of Black women directors, Black women producers to model myself after. But I remember my uncle, who also I consider one of my mentors, before he passed, he gave me an obituary of a Black woman director, Vinette Carroll, who actually won a Tony on Broadway for a musical, Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope. And I was inspired by her story because she also had Jamaican parentage like myself, and had accomplished so much. But it's important to see people who look like you, who have a similar story and a similar background that you can model yourself after.
How old were you when you saw the musical Once on This Island?
So I think I must have been maybe 10 or 11 when I saw that. And gosh, that was such a magical moment watching that musical.
Where did you see that? In Chicago?
I was in Chicago, and it must have been the touring. I'm at one of the Schuberts downtown, the Broadway touring version. Yeah.
I know another thing you're proud of is the fact that Howard University is on your resume, and the 150th commencement, you were part of that down at Howard, and I could feel the energy in 2018 looking back at your speech there. Pre-med was where you were headed. And then you told your parents, I want to do theater. I want to be an actor. And they didn't have the greatest response, did they?
They did not have the greatest response to that. They really didn't, you know. And I can't, you know, I can't blame them, because I think, you know, as immigrant parents, you know, their biggest concern, not biggest concern, but I think biggest wish for me is to make the path a little bit smoother than they had it. And then, you know, and I think for them, being able to have an opportunity to go to an American college was a huge deal. They were the first in their families to even dream about college, let alone a college in the United States. And so it was a big deal for me to go to Howard. And it was a big deal to say, yes, I'm going to be a medical doctor. And then to change midway to say, you know what? I want to do a pathway that's going to be so hard, that's going to be so difficult, that actually you all have no information on. I'm going into the theater. and they just didn't have a way of supporting. And I'm sure, you know, being a parent now, I understand that, because all you want to be able to do is, how can I give you the keys to make it easier? How can I lay the pathway? And when you don't have those tools to offer your child, it's a debilitating thing. So yes, that's a long way to say they were not happy.
You know, no matter who you speak to, people who have success. Most recently, I asked a national champion wrestler what it took from Rutgers University, what it takes to be an Olympian or what it takes to be a national champion. And the word was passion. And the word passion for you has been a big part of you. You create magic on stage. You've had a passion for this. So as you go for this 85th anniversary season, that passion never goes away, does it?
Never. Never goes away. I mean, I think it drives, you know, me personally. I think that passion has to drive an institution also. Passion, vision, and inspiration. You know, through those hard moments of being an arts administrator, trying to balance a budget, trying to work through issues with the season, we've got to still be driven by passion. And my passion is a passion for culture, a passion for Black culture, a passion for the transformative power that I know that arts brings to people when you're in that theater and the lights go down, and the anticipation of the adjacent possible moment that happens right before the moment of transformation. It's exciting. And I'm passionate about creating those spaces for our community.
One thing that's exciting about your career, Camila, is we're speaking with Camila Forbes, who's the executive producer of the Apollo, is your wide range of music. Okay, as a big part and of a 16-year run as leading the Hip Hop Theater Festival. So you have hip hop. Now you're going to have Donny Hathaway's story.
Yeah.
You're going to have the Temptations honored on, you know, on the Walk of Fame.
That's
coming
right
up on the 7th of June, and Otis Williams will be there, the last of the Temptations.
That's right.
You love all kinds of music then?
I do. I really do. It's a passion for just culture as a whole. You know, it's funny when you look at my Spotify playlist, it's kind of all over the place because I'm curious. And that's what I think, you know, we always, what drives me is this idea of, you know, I'm constantly curious of what's new, what else is there, what else is out in the world, how else can I be inspired? So my playlist is all over the place. But you know, what drives it is that curiosity.
Artists like Donny Hathaway had a complicated life, dealt with a mental illness throughout his career, and you touch upon that in Twisted Melodies, starring Kelvin Rolston Jr. This is a collaboration. How does that work?
The work was originally produced by Congo Square Theater Company in Chicago, Illinois, and they then collaborated with the Baltimore Center Stage to restage the work about 2 years ago, and that's when I was able to see it. And it was just an exciting piece of work then, and got several other theaters excited. And so Congo Square and Baltimore Center Stage then came back around to restage the work this upcoming, just recently, it opened at Baltimore, in Baltimore 2 weeks ago. And then it'll come to us at the Apollo, and then the work will go down to the Mosaic Theater in Washington, D.C. So, you know, it's a really exciting ride. And Kelvin, who is not only the performer, but also the writer, and his collaborator, Derek Saunders, has really built an insightful, a thoughtful, a passion-filled piece of work that really asks a lot of questions and exposes a very important conversation that we don't talk about a lot in our community, mental illness. But also just, we also get a peek into the brilliance and the genius that was Donny Hathaway, and an opportunity to experience his music again. It's a really beautiful experience.
Just last week, we had the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater here at NJPAC, and the performance of Lazarus was put together, commissioned by Robert Battle, and Rennie Harris put that together. And I know that, Rennie, a big part of hip-hop culture, along with you, we've seen the connections more and more between jazz and hip-hop. And do you feel that more and more people are understanding the interconnection between jazz and blues and hip-hop and rhythm and blues?
Yeah, I think so. Because you know what? It's all from the same root of the same tree. And that's what we've got to understand, is that it's the same form just translated through different vessels. That's it.
Let's talk a little bit more about the show that you have coming up, Twisted Melodies. You are going to have some discussions about mental illness, too, during this whole run, right?
That's right. So the run is from May 30th through June 2nd. But on our Saturday matinee, we're having a special discussion, specifically post-show discussion around mental illness. And I think that's going to be really great. It's an opportunity to provide further context about the work and to be in further dialogue about this issue.
When's the last time you spoke with Stan Lathan?
Ah, Stan. When is the last time? I want to say maybe a couple months ago. Yeah, a couple months. Maybe no, it was a month ago. It was a month.
Those who don't know the connection between the two of you, can you tell our listeners about?
Sure. So I worked with Stan for many years on the series Deaf Poetry Jam, and then another series, Brave New Voices. And I consider him my mentor. He hired me originally. I first interviewed with him to be his assistant, his personal assistant. And then I didn't get the job. But then I got a better job. And I started off as a talent executive for Deaf Poetry, and then moved on to producer and then executive producer of the series Brave New Voices at HBO.
Best advice he's ever given you?
Best advice he's ever given me is that listening is going to be one of your strongest strengths.
So as you take that, what are you hearing from the community about what they want the Apollo to bring them?
Hmm. What I hear is this question about from the Apollo is this question of always needing a place to belong, of always needing a place that is theirs, which the Apollo has always been. But what I hear from the community is that it's always a necessity to remain that for the community.
The star of the show, James Brown and the Famous Flame.
There's so much synergy going on this week. As I mentioned to you, I did a live panel discussion at Two River Theater in Red Bank.
With Ruben.
With Ruben Santiago Hudson, with Deidre L. Murray, who talked about playing in James Brown's band at the Apollo.
Yes.
Playing the cello and being really one of the only females around at the time.
Wow.
And
wow.
I asked her, well, what was that like? And she said, well, I had a big husband, so it wasn't so bad.
That sounds like teardrop.
When I say the word Apollo, what does Camila Forbes say?
Pride.
Do you remember the first time you were at the Apollo?
Yes, I do. I remember the first time I was at the Apollo. The first time I was there, I just moved to New York City. And actually, I didn't actually go inside because the theater wasn't open. It was a dark day. But I had to see Harlem. I had to see the Blade. And I remember when we turned the corner onto 125th Street, and it was like off far in a distance. And it was almost like the world around me went silent. And we were driving down the street, and the Blade sign that iconic blade sign just became closer and closer and closer and closer. And you know, who would know that years later that I would end up working at the Apollo? But it was a really magical moment, just seeing there, being that close in proximity to what I considered, you know, the capital of Black America. I was in the capital of Black America, Harlem, and to have sort of this beacon of culture, the Apollo, right there at my fingertips, there in person, was amazing.
Why has it taken so long for the expansion at the Apollo? I would think like it would be kind of a natural thing that people would be clamoring for years.
Yeah. You know, and it's something that I think that has been in the works for a while. This development has been in the works for, you know, close to 20 years. So the conversation has been taking place for sure.
Money is always an issue.
It's always. So it's always, how do you strike the deal and what's the best deal possible?
The funding of this whole project, can you give us a little more information
sure.
about that?
Well, the building itself is owned by the state. And because it was the old Victoria Theater, which is landmarked by the state as a landmarked historic location, as is the Apollo, is also a state, is owned by the state and then leased to the nonprofit. But there are cultural spaces that are on several of the floors, and that will be our office spaces and the performance art spaces. And so we've been designated the operator of those spaces. And so that's basically how, and it's a really best possible deal. We'll also have additional cultural collaborators in the space that will be all housed with office space, and we'll also be using the theater spaces as well. The idea for these two new spaces that it is the part of the Apollo Performing Arts Campus, but that the space is being activated by also the Apollo and other community arts organizations.
It could be Twisted Melodies that changes somebody's life that sees a show for the first time at the Apollo. It could be one of the youth programs. You mentioned Professor Freeman and Edmonds during your speech at Howard University. Give us a little bit more about that relationship you had, and what did they teach you?
Sure. Well, I'll start with Professor Edmonds. Professor Henry Edmonds was head of the acting department at that time. And one of her biggest lessons to all of the actors is that it is business show. And so really what she tried to stress is this idea of professionalism and business etiquette as artists, and how important it was. It wasn't just important to be a great artist, but it was also important to making sure that you are minding the business of the art.
Also, was it the fact that she was a female that made it such an impression on you as well?
You know what? I think it was. I think it was the fact that she was a female, and just really strong and really clear about values and morals.
Professor Freeman?
And Professor Freeman, Professor Al Freeman. I mean, he just a legendary actor, and he was a mentor, I think, to us all. I mean, all of our professors, I think, at Howard were at that time. But, you know, he was a mentor in process. One thing about Freeman is that we learned is specificity, specificity, specificity. Specificity is craft. As actors, as storytellers, as directors, and how important that was. It wasn't just enough to embody the world. It was more important how does this person really sound? How do they really look? How can we really dig beneath the surface? And the idea, I think, of specificity has followed me, because to me, when I hear specificity now, the other word that rings true also is always authenticity. We find authenticity through specificity.
We mentioned during that panel discussion about the show was Oubla Dee, and it's about an all-female jazz group back in the end of World War II. While men were fighting in the war, they were creating their own magic on stage. The fact that some of these great places like the Apollo and the Billie Holiday Theater run by females, that's a good thing, right?
That's a great thing. That's a great thing. Because like I said, I mean, look, when I was growing up, I didn't see these examples. And now, you know, I look at the Apollo, Billie Holiday, National Black Theater in Harlem, Harlem Stage. I mean, there's an influx of women leadership around arts and cultural arts institutions right now. And that's a great thing. It's a great thing because when we talk about equity and diversity, we're not just talking about it, but we're practicing it.
Do all of you get together at any point, like have lunch and talk
we
about?
We do.
what are some of the things you talk about?
I mean, you know, we talk about sustainability. We talk about successes. We talk about collaboration. I meet frequently also with Anna Glass of Dance Theater of Harlem. We talk about, you know, and when we just talk about like sisterhood things, like, you know, raising children in New York City, like, and the challenges that that brings. And we talk about raising children in the midst of running arts organizations. What does that mean? So we kind of talk about it all, but what it's really become is like a great support network. And we can pick up the phone and either support, be a listening ear, or also provide resources for one another.
If you had one day left at the Apollo, what would you do there?
Oh my gosh. One day left at the Apollo. I would sit on the stage at the start of the day and just be still and sit with the voices and sit with the spirits that live beneath the baseboards of that building.
The stories they could tell, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. If the walls could talk.
I mean, you've had an amazing career, but it has to be so special to be the executive producer of the Apollo.
It is truly a highlight and divine, and I don't take it lightly, you know, being here at the Apollo, because it's definitely a dream, and I realize how everything I've done kind of has led me to this point, and I'm as proud as could be.
Once again, the show Twisted Melodies will run from the 30th of May to June 2nd. And also coming up on June 7th is The Temptations going into the Apollo's Walk of Fame. And Otis Williams from The Temptations will be there. Is there something that we haven't talked about that you want to mention about either your role there or the season, the 85th season, or management, anything you want to talk about?
No, I mean, look, we have an incredible team at the Apollo, and I'm really thrilled for our team. I'm thrilled for the next generation. I'm thrilled for the Apollo to come. Oh, we have a documentary. Maybe I'll talk about that. The Apollo made a documentary that will appear on HBO this fall. It opened the Tribeca Film Festival.
You mean there's enough information about the Apollo
can
for a documentary?
Can you believe it? You know, the biggest challenge is how do you distill 85 years into 90 minutes? And that was the biggest challenge, I think, of the filmmaker. But the director, Roger Ross Williams, did a fantastic job, and his team of producers, Lisa Cortez and the White Horse Pictures family.
Can it be narrowed down to the top moment at the Apollo? Could that ever?
You know what? And you realize through the film, it really can't, because, you know, they paint this picture of the Apollo as almost a living, breathing entity that is not just about one moment of performance, but how it's been a vehicle for the community for years. Through all of the different changes and trials and tribulations, specifically in Harlem, but also in America as a whole. But also, the beautiful thing I think what the film does is also, you know, shines a light on where we are now today at the Apollo, but also where we intend to go.
Your mom, a doctor, your dad, an engineer, when they found out you wanted to do theater, we talked about that, they questioned it. But now, after this run that you've had, including being the executive producer of the Apollo Theater and award-winning director and producer, what's been the comment they've said to you that really has meant the most?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a great question. The comment that they've said to me that has meant the most is that, wow, we're really proud of you.
Absolutely, and we're proud of you, and we're thrilled that you joined us today on the WBGO Journal.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so special. Thank you.
I've been so many places in my life and time. I've sung a lot of songs. I've made some bad rhymes. I've acted out my life in stages.
with 10,000 people watching. But we're alone now, and I'm singing this song to you. I know your image of me is what I hope to be. I treated you unkindly, but darling, can't you see? There's no one more important to me. Baby, can't you see through me? We're alone now, and I'm singing this song to you.